Welcome to Weekly Wings, still your go-to podcast from DroneLife.com, where we soar through the latest in drone technology, regulatory updates, and exciting innovations. Each week, join Samuel, Terry, and I as we navigate the drone industry, offering expert insights, interviews with key figures, and a bird's eye view of how drones are shaping our world. From commercial applications to recreational adventures, Weekly Wings delves into how these remarkable vehicles are impacting construction, education, delivery services, agriculture, filmmaking, and much more. Whether you're a professional drone operator, a hobbyist, or just drone curious, tune in to stay informed and inspired as we explore the heights of what's possible in the world of drones. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of Weekly Wings, where the future is looking up. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. What is going on, Samuel?
Nothing much, Paul. Looks like we have a fun few stories, another light show in the queue. Made that joke last week. I was going to have one every week, and so far it actually might happen, huh?
Yeah, this is a really neat one. Really cool one. A lot of overlap, a lot of different things, space, Legos, light shows. How you doing, Terry?
Doing fine, Paul. Thank you for asking. Excited to get into it today.
Yeah. I went to the zoo on Memorial Day, just in case anyone was wondering. It was pretty cool.
How was that? You see any?
I've been to a good zoo.
What, that was, you don't think the North Carolina Zoo is a good zoo?
That's the zoo I went to.
I know, but like,
but I don't think I've ever been. I haven't been to the North Carolina Zoo.
But do you consider it a good zoo?
And comparative
now?
To other zoos I've gone to, I think it's a good zoo. Yeah, I think I might find myself possibly going back. The polar bear disappeared. Must be summertime. But that was really cool to see some of the things. And then I would say this one, the before we jump into things here, the brown bear, it just kept doing the same circle. It would walk up to the thing and it would like throw its head to the side and then it would go back and it literally walked the same path. And these people would come and they'd see it and they go, oh, that's so cool. And then they'd leave to the next thing. But we stood there for long enough. I looked at my wife. I said, that bear is a robot. So 100%.
It's on its automated path.
That is a robot bear that kept, it was caught in a loop. And I was just thinking to myself, like, are we that far from, you know, such advanced robotic AI technology that you will be able to not just go to a zoo, but even like pet a lion. Because the idea here is that this is an AI lion that looks like a real lion. It's not going to bite you. And this whole thing right here is just feeding into that Terminator. You know, how are we going to, you know, win if we're fighting robotic lions? But anyway,
that whole paragraph before we go anywhere, it's giving Westworld. I don't know if you saw the 2019 HBO Westworld. Yeah.
Awesome. So yeah, that is exactly what it is. Westworld, Terry, if you haven't seen it, HBO, that is a really good one. It's got, what's his, the,
Aaron
Silence
Paul
of the Lamb
the
guy
cast.
In it, right?
I know who you're talking about, the older guy. I can't remember his name. Oh my gosh. But yeah, it's a great cast. It does some really cool stuff. Go ahead.
And the guy that played, was it Bernard?
Yeah.
Was it like
yeah.
His main, his OG was like, that guy ended up going on and he's now like, I think Westworld really put him off. I see Terry's looking stuff up, but let's kind of jump into the drone stuff here. We're going to talk about Drone for First Responders Act, and what folks are doing in response to that. We'll talk about Responder brings new DFR drone. We're going to jump into some very recent news that came out today. Amazon's Beyond Visual Line of Sight operations, and then again, Lego drone light show. Something we'll touch on because it's really cool, and we're going to save time at least to touch on the North Carolina drone pilot who's trying to navigate some legal court stuff in regards to drones for mapping. So without further ado, we can kind of jump into this. I'm going to share my screen. It's not sharing the screen. This is a really interesting one here. There's just been a lot going on and then this, right? So Elise Stefanik, I think is how it's pronounced. Elise Stefanik is a Congresswoman who May 15th here seeks to introduce a bill to bolster the U.S. drone industry. And this is the Drones for First Responders Act. So initially you think, oh, Drones for First Responders Act, let's support that. Who doesn't support Drones for First Responders? We just talked about it, you know, previously in the whole congressional hearing. And then you read currently 90% of drones are made in the People's, you know, Republic of China, da da da. And so the idea here is to find a way to bring more U.S. drones to the table. And how do you do that? Well, we're just going to tax the crap out of Chinese drones leading up into the point where they just become no longer legal in the year 2030.
What? Okay, I was going to ask about that because I saw it starts at what, 30% tariff rate and then 5% every year? Something like that? 5%
every year.
Yeah. That's right. Pretty
so
insane.
So after, in that fifth year, you're 50%. So your drone, your $1,000 drone is $1,500. And after the fourth year, there is something in here. I don't think it's mentioned on this site here, and it just feels awful even putting this up on here. But for people to understand, you got to see where this is coming from. So this is, again, right from the Congresswoman's website. But you've
we
got these
.gov in there.
new tariffs, right? You got these new tariffs, and then $100. So actually, after the fourth year, not only is the tariff increased, making it 50% markup, but then there's a plus $100. So it doesn't matter if the drone's $500 or if the drone's $10,000, it's going to have a 50% markup plus $100. Mm. So, and that's not like only for public safety. The way that this language and from what I've been reading is, hey, this applies to any drone from the PRC. So you go on Amazon, $100 drone becomes $150 drone plus $100. So it's $250. The $10,000 drone becomes $15,000 plus $100 in that fourth year. And then again, with this whole 2030 saying, and then after that, it's going to be completely U.S. or not U.S., but just not China.
Kind of makes me wonder if anyone's
so it's not like,
able
hey,
to
we're
actually
just trying
fill
to
that void.
I don't think anybody's on DJI's level in terms of producing.
And it's the volume, right? It's just the volume of a lot of $1,000 drones where you don't have high margin. So if you are selling inexpensive drones, you have to sell a lot of them. You have to have a huge market. So there are companies that are making drones in the U.S., but they're not making them at volume and they're not checking all boxes. They're like only relevant for a small user group. So the product itself is isolating the user. So in order to, you know, create more demand for a certain product, you say, oh, well, we're not going to allow them to buy this and we're going to add tariffs. And there's things written into the language where, oh, the money that's the extra money, the 50, the 30, the 35, the 40, these percentages increased over the years. This money is supposed to go into grants for public safety operators, grants for agriculture and farmers, and then also, I like never have sound audio on, but anyway, dang it. Grants for critical infrastructure. So it's like 50%, 25, 25. So this whole increase the tax, they're also selling it as, well, we are going to take this money and give it back to who and who's going to determine that and what's the grant process going to look like and how challenging is it going to be? And the whole idea here is that as they give those grants out, these users, these end users are buying it from that American company. So in a sense, the money gets to where it's supposed to go.
For those curious, yeah, this bill is coming out of New York.
I have a story that I can share with you guys, but I'm not sure if I should, because I feel like the guy that told me it probably shouldn't have been saying what he was saying. I'm just going to do it. All right. So one day when I was working, we fly delivery missions. So that's what I was doing. I was the forward pilot for that mission, and I was meeting with the customer. And he came outside, and he started talking to me about drones. This dude so happened to work for the Army in the drone division. I don't know what to call it, but he worked for the Army. He was in the military, and he dealt with drones. He told me that the military had to stop using DJI drones, or at least their unit had to stop using DJI drones because upper something another told them not to, or they were they found out they were being recorded somehow. So they had to stop using DJI drones completely. So I think the military has already implemented this. But I could explain that better. But
and there is, though, from a DHS, a department, this is slowly they've said, all right, the military can't use it. The government can't use it. The federal government can't use it. You can't use federal funds. They've been implementing a lot of measures in order to try to create customers for a U.S. or a secure, an NDAA, a blue drone. Like if you want to sell your product on the military, government services website, it has to be vetted. So there are drones that are vetted, but they're only checking and meeting a few boxes. So now this is all right, well, it didn't work. We made the government buy U.S. drones, but that's not enough money. That's not enough sales to keep them going. Now they're forcing more people to be non-DJI, and then they're removing it from their hands. So your recreational pilot that just flies FPV and wants to have a good time is not going to be able to even build and make and put their own drones together because they're purchasing T motors and all these components that are coming from a country that has built itself up into a technology manufacturing country and taking advantage of the resources available to them, much like any other country is, trying to become you think other countries, what are they well known for? What are they exporting? What do they have there that other folks don't? But it also comes down to not just having the resources, the labor costs to put pieces together in China versus the United States versus Switzerland versus any other country, your cost of manufacturing is lower. It's weird to kind of see this. Folks are saying it probably won't, make it far, but.
Well, I think that might lead well into our next piece and kind of, if not China, where would you get your drone?
Yeah. And people are already looking at that and thinking, well, hey, even if this bill doesn't pass today or tomorrow or next month, now that's where the conversation is heading. And now it's made people start to ask questions and are there security concerns? And looking at a Drone Life article that came out, we'll bring it up here, is talking about a company folks are familiar with in this space, Wing, right? A subsidiary of Google. What does Google make? A lot of tech devices, phones. I think Samuel's might be a Google phone user.
Google Pixel.
But yeah, Wing operates drones. And so Wing makes their own drones. And if you stop and think, well, where do they make other products that they've been using and selling? Right, for years, China. So now this article comes out and we see how Google's discussing and, those conversations are happening that are like, hey, where should we be manufacturing our drones? And India is in the conversation. So manufacturing plan and Alphabet's commitment to expanding its hardware capabilities and leveraging India's manufacturing strengths.
Notably, Terry and I mentioned before the podcast, you know, with Google making their phones over in China, or I'm not currently aware of if they are still actively doing that, but Apple was, and they actually moved their productions over to India, as far as I recall.
Yeah, it says here that Alphabet Inc., the parent company for Google and Wing, announced plans to manufacture its flagship Pixel smartphones in Tamil Nadu. And so I think India too, like if you start to look at it from a software standpoint, a hardware standpoint, you know, capabilities, you know, a country that's looking to continue to grow and develop and be involved in like Web3 type stuff, you know, like the future. India, flight base. I don't know if folks have heard of flight base. There's, you know, a lot of, you go to the events, the COM UAV, you know, seeing it here, you go to AUVSI and you'll see a lot of different drones that are being, manufactured and produced out of India.
And again, for folks that are familiar, like flight base, like, just the sheer amount of it is kind of overwhelming.
And then I also think that they're probably leveraging drones a lot from having like that high population, growing industries, growing development. You know, what are drones doing? They're helping people scale operations. I saw this crazy video, all these female drone pilots. I don't know if you guys saw it on LinkedIn. It was like a bunch of female drone pilots in India. They had this this recent kind of program or grant thing that came out where they were affording and providing women the opportunity to get drone training. And again, just trying to really advance and bolster their whole industry. So it seems like they're not just manufacturing these drones, but they've got a lot of folks that are integrating them into business, meaning they need drones. And as we're seeing in America, when you start to build a degree of dependence on a product, you'd probably feel more comfortable if that product is manufactured in your own country versus somewhere else. So just for folks that are tuning in, FlightBase, FlytBase, they're a software company out of India that's, you know, focusing heavily on the remote operations, the dock operations, working with DJI drones, the other one, the Aerodome house that drone garage, for lack of better terms, they're working with that. So trying to help advance beyond visual line of sight, scalability, right? Operations that are going to scale. What do you think about that, Terry? You going to go to India?
I would be down to go to India. I know they're like on a upward trend for economic growth, and moving all these producers of technology will only help them. So India sounds like a cool place to be, honestly.
Yeah, so it's definitely going to be a really, really exciting. And then when you look at the Google aspect, the Wing aspect, it's scale, right? You're going to do drone delivery. You're probably going to need quite a few drones. So being able to find that place, that acceptable country of origin that is going to be able to help you, again, scale and produce as many drones as you need, but also in the future be of a trusted level that's acceptable. But hopefully we see this build just fail and collapse and we can go forward from there. I want to jump over to something, you know, really cool, just to stay on that first responder aspect and to kind of also explain why maybe just letting the industry and letting folks make decisions, but really allowing business and capitalism to work itself out, is because things are advancing in the US as well. And we see Brink has brought a purpose-built drone responder, Brink. So traditionally Brink has been known for interior drone flight. They came out the Lemur 2, which was, you know, an attempt at developing a product that could be used outdoors, indoors, kind of compete potentially with DJI, but just, you know, again, not to the degree of where the industry needs it. And now unleashing in a community near you, unveiling the Responder drone. And so what's really cool about this, the Responder drone, is it's basically built like a police car. You know, you don't just buy a car and then just do the changes at the station or at the office. Or no, you work with a company that can take that traditional commercial product and they adapt it at their facility, and it's delivered to a department as a police car, cruiser, fire truck, what have you. So seeing Brink really grasp their roots of, hey, we're making a drone that the police fly inside in order to find bad people and to save good people, to saying we're going to make a drone that's black and white, just like a cop car. And then they've got lights on it, so it flashes red and white, just like a cop car. It's got a siren that plays audio, just like a response vehicle. And it's providing that 640 thermal, that high resolution visual, that zoom capability that everyone is used to. And they've put it in a deployable dock.
Notably, for those listening, it's a quadcopter with a camera, with a gimbal, sensors on the front. Back two props are actually elevated. They're not a... I'm trying to think how to describe that, but yeah, to visualize it.
They're flipped. So they're... The back props are actually inverted, and you've got two RTK or two GPS, which I believe are RTK modules, actually above it. So redundancy in your GPS and inverted rear motors, as Samuel mentioned. And Terry, you were saying
it can hold a payload. They're showing it off for like Narcan, AEDs, EpiPens. It says PFD. I'm not exactly sure what a PFD is, but
PFD, personal flotation device.
Okay. Now that you explained that to me, that would probably be the most useful case for the payload attachment.
Did you see that video, Paul?
Yeah, they've got some really cool.
Yeah, I was kind of curious how it gives you the payload, but I guess that's the easiest and safest way.
Yep. So you've got like you'll have a button on the remote controller. They've probably fully integrated it, so it's not one of those, you know, turn the light on and it's light activated. Through your C2 link, you've got a, you know, a programmed button on the remote that's going to allow that item to release. And so we're playing here on the screen now. We pulled up the Brink website, but still, you've got their indoor tactical drone, you know, their Lemur 2. And then you've got your outdoor response drone, which is Responder. The drone is called Responder, from what I understand. And turn that Responder drone into a drone as a first responder by putting it in the Brink dock. So pretty cool. They're saying, you know, neat facts like this coming from Chula Vista, you know, under 70 second response time. 1 in 4 calls are cleared solely with drones. 54% quicker human response times because drones are clearing the non-priority calls, which I think it's a ways to get to, like, we're just going to send the drone for the non-priority versus the departments and the organizations that are like, all right, we're first using these drones for the high risk situations.
I'm curious what, like,
did I just see something?
Go ahead, Terry.
Sorry. I seen you scrolled past something and said gunshot detection. Yep. I don't know if that is that on the drone?
Yep. So not on the drone, but gunshot detection. I'm trying to remember, shot spotter. So there's a technology. Here's a real pretty cool close up, and they still have their two-way speaker, IPX4 rating, emergency lights and sirens. A shot spotter is a software technology where communities, towns, and cities have started to put actual speakers. They put speakers out, you know, right on poles, right with your regular, you know, street lights and things like of that nature. And 24/7, that speaker and that series of speakers is just waiting to detect a gunshot. Mm. And these speakers, if a gunshot goes off, what they can do is triangulate a, you know, projected position of the shot itself, the sound. And what you can then do is, you know, within seconds of the gunshot, you've got a supposed location, and then immediately send the drone.
I didn't know about the speaker thing, but they should add some type of microphone to the drone. And then, like, I mean, if there's ongoing shots, like maybe there's a shootout or something, and that's what it's responding to, it can help narrow down the location. I don't know how exactly it would do that.
Well, it's constantly talking to, like, it's constantly on the network. So even if it's deployed, if another gunshot goes off, the system, the ground-based sensors should always detect it. But I hear what you're saying. Like, if you're in an area where the ground-based sensors aren't, maybe the drone could become its own audio detector.
Does it have the stats on there, like the distance, battery life, things like that? I haven't seen that yet. Yeah, this is kind of
website's so cool, isn't it?
Yeah, get caught up on all the videos.
Isn't this like it's attachment rail? 42-minute flight time.
I'm also curious to see some of the real world examples, or like just action, like see this thing in action, like after a month or so in use, and see.
And then here's the thing, right? So we're talking about the drone as a first responder act. This is literally a drone called Responder. Drones. What was the act? Drones for First Responders Act. The yeah. Drones for First Responders Act. And this is called Responder, you know? And then you've got this right here. I'm trying to like zoom in further. It's not going to let me. It doesn't want to work today. Is right here, right? This drone's NDAA compliant. It's manufactured in the U.S. So as their founder, Blake mentioned in their announcement videos, like, it's not easy to make a drone in the United States with all US components. And if you're going to do it, it's going to be very, you know, semi-specific. But for them to be able to put this on here, this is American made, manufactured in the US, it's compliant, it's federal agencies can use federal funding to purchase this. If the drone is a First Responder Act went live, this drone would have no additional taxes charged on it because it's using no Chinese components. So it is possible. And this website looks awesome. But how does the drone actually fly? How does the dock station actually work? Is it reliable? Is it consistent? Does the interface function well? There's still a lot of questions. And until departments are flying these and putting them through the paces, we just won't know.
Curious when we're actually going to see something like that, when we can see those in real life examples or some feedback.
Yeah, it is. And then it makes me think back to Asilon, right? Because still sharing this, bringing this up, it's the same thing. Right. There's just not like people may not have as much buzz, the website, the amount of funding that they've brought in. But, you know, they're fully integrated with ground robots and they've got a docking station. It's not as cool. Their drone doesn't have police lights and sirens, but they're not necessarily selling it to police and fire departments. They're actually selling it to private companies, that want to secure their own stuff. So does this need to be NDAA compliant if you're using your own money to purchase it and you're not over critical infrastructure? Maybe not. So there are solutions and there are products, and the market is very balanced, I guess. Like, there's balance to the force in the sense that you have the dark Sith Lord of DJI, and some people use it and they get the job done and they're not necessarily bothering anybody. And then you also have your responder drones and your, you know, your the good side, the light side, right? Yoda, right? I think of like these American drones. It's kind of like Yoda, you know. It's like it gets the job done, but like you don't really want to bother it or anything, and the support isn't as awesome. But anyway, that's a terrible comparison. I've been doing some pretty bad comparisons today. But it's really cool to see this, right? To see a drone that's just, it's got sirens. It's a police drone.
It looks exactly like the British cop cars. I don't know if you've ever seen a British cop car, but that's definitely the design route they took for this drone in terms of
badging,
the way it looks, the way it looks.
Yeah. Like the badging, the way they like actually put like a badge on the car or on the drone instead of writing, like
it's like the checkered pattern. It just looks exactly like a British cop car.
Yeah. No, the off yellow, orange and red checker pattern. Well, right on, kind of moving along here into our next segment, looking for questions. So again, dronelife.com, you can send in questions for any future episodes that you want to have answered or ask about previous episodes or anything we discuss. But you can email Miriam at dronelife.com. you can email myself, Paul Rossi, Rossi, at 910drones.com. Or you can put a comment on any of the videos here on YouTube, and we'll be sure to try to answer your questions to the best of our ability. Moving on, just wanted to touch Amazon, some big news that came out today regarding their delivery operations theme a little bit, is permissions to fly drones over longer distances, leveraging beyond visual line of sight. So, Texas, where do we end up? Like, where does this story bring us? Because we don't have forever to talk on this one topic here, right? But it all goes back to College Station. Too much Zoom. College Station, Texas. And later in 2024, drone deliveries will be integrated into its broader delivery network. So that beyond visual line of sight, initially starting in that Texas, right? I believe that's the DFW area. And a lot of what's discussed, and not all the specific details, but just Amazon has been working closely, demonstrating, right, over the past several years, developing its onboard detect and avoid technology. It submitted engineering information to the FAA, including operation, maintenance, and performance details. They conducted flight tests in front of the FAA to demonstrate how safely they can navigate their drones away from other air traffic. Onboard detect and avoid.
I'm kind of curious how many actual delivery sites they have currently going, because I think they have a very small number. From what I'm seeing, at least in another article I pulled up, I was curious about that, but really cool that they're expanding.
Well,
I'm curious how their growth is going to be.
That thing is massive.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there's customers, right? They've already got packages to move on demand. What?
So are they actually delivering like real packages to these people, or is it like they take it straight from the facility and just deliver it to the customers?
My guess is that they actually are putting this in a region where folks are using their Amazon Prime subscriptions and they're placing, like, you know, how you can order $25 item and get it the same day. It would make sense to me that they would piggyback off of
kind of like straight from the warehouse,
their current. Yeah. And especially the size of this drone, you're not just like pop it up somewhere. I mean, this could be the warehouse right here. I don't know, but then this,
I'd hate to charge that thing. That's for sure. It's massive.
I mean, that thing's on jacks right there. So this almost looks like it could be like the hub itself, like an actual distribution center.
Is there a visual observer tower, clearly?
Oh, yeah. it's hilarious. I was only looking at the bottom. I was like, well, that looks a truck. And then now I'm like, that looks like if you told ChatGPT to give you a picture of a really tall truck, you'd be like, what is that thing? Yeah, you're right. Now they don't need that anymore. If you go back, they're like, oh yeah, we're going beyond visual line of sight. Which really, that's funny. You know, what does that mean? It means that we don't have to use this anymore. Or it could mean that they might even be using that for like their tech. You know, I don't know. Maybe there's a sensor in there. You know, they're for radar. I don't know.
Position the drone in such a way to where they couldn't show the top of it. Or hiding it.
Yeah. But it's really cool, right? Because the onboard detect and avoid, the ground-based detect and avoid, we've seen this, like they said, for years. Folks have had corridors. New Air's had a corridor. Grand Forks. I'm completely butchering it, but in the Great Plains test site, and I think Grand Forks, they've had corridors, you know, areas where drones could go fly using, you know, radar prior to onboard detect and avoid. But also, how do you test onboard detect and avoid? You go into an area where you already have traditional radar. So it's neat to see these things advancing and developing. And I can imagine this is a first of, you know, a few more advancements to come for operators in the Dallas area. Mm-hmm. The drone light shows, we just can't
ding ding ding.
I feel terrible. We keep talking about drone light shows and people are like, oh my god, where are these, why you guys are making this up, because it's, we're not seeing them. Yeah, here we go again. Lego, right?
Lego. I think at this point the algorithm
drone light show
keeps throwing the light shows at me.
Yeah, Samuel, what do we got here?
Yeah, I mean, Lego, very well known for their creativity, ingenuity, decided to jump on and get involved with light shows, which is pretty cool. And honestly, they have a video in this article. There's nothing that imperatively makes it stand out too much, other than, hey, we're creative, we're doing drone light shows, but it was pretty cool to see them put that together. I think it's really neat too, because I think this is also going to introduce the next generation to this technology as well. Because as a kid, you know, when one of my favorite things was Legos, it taught me how to build, kind of struck that creative nerve to keep pursuing. Hey, why didn't this work? Why did my little Lego building fall apart? I think there's even a little Lego Technic, I think it's called, where you can build robots with batteries and you can tell the robots to do different things. So I think it's going to be a good stepping platform for younger kids to learn more about drones and drone light shows and whatnot. Oh, what's that, Paul?
Oh, wow, look at this dude.
That's the shout out and thanks to John, Mr. McBride. He dragged me into the Lego store when he was here, and ended up, I was like, oh, now that I'm in here, I'm like holding boxes of Legos. And he's like, yeah,
he sounds, I'll get like those.
And I was like, all right. Yeah. I don't know if you, so John McBride, huge guy in the drone industry, but, he's always putting stuff out there that in his free time, I think he did the Titanic ship, but, one of his huge,
Hopefully, I was gonna say, don't make me pull something. Yeah, he, don't well, make again, me pull out the Lego sets.
Yeah, pulling out the Lego sets, but he's a huge Lego guy. And now that I've got the two younger kids, I can't wait till they're a little older because now they just want to eat the Legos. But the space stuff, right? I think what's really neat and curious, Terry, your thoughts on this, but the, you know, what are they doing? They're using it as a marketing. So you said, we'll play the video. You said it's not like the most grand light show you've ever seen, but they're not an entertainment company in the sense of come watch entertainment. We're trying to compete with Disney or Universal. They're using drone light shows as that way to connect with their audience, right? Which is folks that build Legos, you know, younger folks and folks that are into space. So they had two new space sets come out, which I think is really neat and ties it to the marketing aspect, the Artemis 5 and the Milky Way. If I can get it, if it ever, once it gets shipped, back ordered, jumped on it, Milky Way will be hanging up here as soon as it gets in. But they're promoting the launch of these, you know, next developments in the set. We're getting ready to go to, you know, Mars and habitate the moon, right? Build on the moon. So really cool that they're using it as kind of that marketing thing to get kids and get folks excited.
Well, not only kids. So I don't know if you guys know this or not, but Lego actually heavily advertises to older folks, people that grew up on Legos, basically still
talking about those millennials, Terry.
To them. So like the Lego Technic sets, the millennials, yes. Lego Technic sets, stuff like that artwork that you just showed.
This is $200. Like that's not 40. That's a two. That's the Milky Way.
Yeah.
That is the Milky Way. And when I saw that, and when you start to look at the details, you're like, these are not Legos that are designed for this purpose. They have picked such a random assortment of Legos that you could find on any Lego thing. And you're absolutely right, Terry. They are like marketing. I had tubs of I had Lego tables. We had it all. And so now to be able to take it and hang it and still use it, because I'm not going to physically play with it, but to actually put a piece of art like that on the wall, it's genius.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy too, because it looks like they extruded some of those pieces and you can feel that. It's not flat completely. It's a cool tagline.
I think they did a good job. You were talking them down there for a second.
I'm not necessarily trying to say that they did a bad job, but they didn't do anything like Disney where they had very recognizable IP characters that you are going to feel that nostalgia for. If they dug into their back catalog of Bionicles, I would lose my mind because that's what I loved as a kid. I want to see that OG Lego stuff.
Dude,
go ahead.
That is so cool. Look at these drones. They're launching right out of the cases. You see
in
that?
New York City too. That's crazy.
And dude, and so what did they do? Look at that. That is a mattress with wings. Because what did they do? So they didn't just do a light show. And Samuel definitely, you know, if you talk down a little bit. is they had six kids. Like they had kids write in and submit, like, what would your spaceship be? And that's what we had seen in this photo here. But they had kids submit, like, what would their rocket ship, how would they get to space? And kids just, like, submitted these crazy ideas. And then they took their ideas and put them into this drone light show. So on the screen you're seeing here is a Tyrannosaurus Rex, right,
with
a jet pack on. I'm like, how cool is this? My kids love dinosaurs. Like, that is the next drone light show I want to go to. And then they were like, oh, a kid submitted a bed with wings on it. I was like, how cool is that? And they literally turned it into a drone light show.
Without the prompts and context, do you think you would be able to identify what you're looking at? To some extent, yeah.
T-Rex.
But not, I have to stare at that guy for a good bit, be like, what is that? And of course, it fits very well for what they're doing here with the entire context of, hey, we're doing this for a publicity video. That works well. For people who might be watching in New York who see the drones going up, it's like, oh, that's a T-Rex?
Yeah, like this, like, can you tell that's a mattress with wings? Which in person, it might come across as a little easier to see. Mm-hmm. But from the marketing standpoint, those kids, they knew exactly what they're,
I'm assuming they made the kids draw something, right? And then they took it from the draw. Do we have photos of the drawings? Because maybe it wasn't that they were accurate. You know?
We'll have to follow up. If anyone has pictures of the drawings, please submit them. You'll have to. There's some homework. But I do think it's neat because it's capturing the aspect that drones are cool. Drones are space. Drones are aerospace. They're scientific. They're STEM. And then being on the creative side where you can, you know, now take the drones and take these children's artwork and their designs and use it as a way to get people to just start talking about, hey, we've got these new Lego sets and the Milky Way, it's sold out. So Terry, it's like $200 Lego set. That's literally art. It's not, it's at the end of the day, it's like not even traditional Lego. It's art. It's cool. Hang it on your wall. And they did well.
Gonna wear my Lego shirt next time. Because you shared that,
Samuel, and brought this story. Well, because you did the story and brought this, you know, to this week's discussion, I literally ended up Milky Way. Mm. So now I just got to wait 3 years for it. No, kidding. So one of the last things that we really wanted to touch on that we had on the agenda for last week, but weren't able to get to. And then also, before I get into this, if you've been following Drone Life over the past week and seeing the stories that come out, it's just probably making your head spin how many deals, partnerships, mergers, announcements that have come out just over the past week. It just seems like there's so many companies that are partnering and working together to advance this or to advance that. So this is going to be the year of partnerships in order to actually advance, you know, the beyond visual line of sight operations, the more complex stuff, because no longer is like one entity or organization able to bring every aspect to the table. Now you have to have the ground base, the air base, the this technology being integrated into this product, because that's what the future looks like. Just like here in this, I'll share as I start to talk about this article, right? We see the advertisement here on Drone Life, right? For beyond visual line of sight, detect targets from small UAS to aircraft. So, you know, detect this right here. This is the technology that needs to get integrated, you know, L-Sight, no game over, fly BVLOS with connection confidence, right? You don't want your screen to shut off when you're flying beyond visual line of sight, like game over, you know, it's pretty good marketing there. But anywho, Michael Jones is a North Carolina drone operator who, you know, was found to have been creating aerial maps in North Carolina and is not a licensed surveyor. So, you know, surveying folks got involved and a court case ensued and Michael Jones and his company were taken to court. And it was deemed that, you know, a drone pilot is not allowed to use their drone in order to, you know, provide aerial imagery in a sense that, you know, would maybe a surveyor would represent. So initial thoughts, I know with this being, you know, something from here in North Carolina, you guys both kind of were intrigued by this.
It is kind of weird, unlike many other states.
We talked about it.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of digging into that sentence you had highlighted, though, is it seems kind of weird that he can't offer even basic maps? Even if, like, is it due to... I mean, I guess I'm trying to understand why that necessarily is, you know?
And I'm curious, too, as to, like, what actually... What, when this all goes back to, was it a map that was had measurements on it and it was presented and said, this is the measurements of this? Or was it just a map that was no different than, like, a JPEG photo?
Right. I don't know. I've definitely stitched some photos together to make a collage turned into, you know, you could maybe classify it as a map. With a multiple aerial photos, and it looked really cool and I liked it, but it's like, is that technically something I could not sell? Would that be I guess it's at what term does it get classified under mapping?
I think it has to do with the license that you need to do it.
Probably so the intent, I think it as well.
Could probably be anything with measurements.
Yeah.
Like anything with measurements, or if you're like selling it to a company or, you know, publishing it for official use.
Probably depends how much money you're making.
Yeah. And so this has gone on for like a really significant amount of time. Like this incident it's been years. You know, is aerial mapping the same as surveying? Well, the North Carolina Board of Engineers says yes. So it was the North Carolina Board of Engineers, you know, that is seeing it and has communicated to a court that whatever was provided in that instance, you know, was in fact to be classified, as Terry mentioned, under, hey, you need this license in order to produce that. Just like a drone pilot. And you can make a video and, you know, sell it. But if just because you can do it, if you don't meet the licensing requirements, so the technology, anyone can buy an RTK, you know, you could buy your ground-based stuff, but you couldn't go out there and use it and then sell the data if you're not licensed. So I feel like without like knowing all the details, because when I first had the opportunity to like reach out to Michael and try to, you know, just learn and engage, it was still during a lot of the court proceedings. So obviously there's only so much someone is going to say and divulge when they're in the middle of a case. And that's where I've never been able to get down to the point of knowing exactly what maps were they questioning. Because just giving someone stitched together images and saying, oh, here you go, you can look at this, it's nice, it's visual, it's pretty. But if I started drawing lines on that map, if I started, you know, plotting locations, if I started doing those services that are regulated by the North Carolina, you know, Board of Engineers through their surveying framework, then yeah, I'm not legal. And so it's interesting because, you know, 910 Drones were now a supporter of the North Carolina Society of Surveyors. So just like there's drone pilots, there's licensed surveyors and they have their own society and they get together and they buy drones. Like surveyors use drones and they're using the drone technology in a way that's appropriate with the training and the current framework. So it's not saying, it's just, hey, if you don't meet these qualifications, you shouldn't be producing this type of data.
Well, it says basic. I mean, I can't take an aerial view of my neighborhood, like, or my house. Like, come on, man.
But basic, again, what is basic? Just the picture?
I'm assuming.
But when you start giving basic land information, which would be, hey, this is the corner of your property. Hey, this is your easement, right? This is your boundaries. Because what people think is that you can fly your drone up in the air, and they think that now you can show them where the boundary is between their property and their neighbor's property. But if you're going to start telling people what the boundary is and where it is, that's surveying. Now you're not just flying a drone. So basic land information could be, I don't know, almost anything.
Good point. Good point.
Got them dogs barking. Final thoughts on the episode and on anything here at the surveying, or
I think that was a pretty good episode.
Stuff we touched on.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I kind of want to see another light show.
Can we make our own segment for drone light shows since it happens every week now? Is that possible?
Just have a, yeah. It feels that way. I feel like it made itself. We didn't have an option. Drone light shows was just like, I'm here.
They kept popping up. We're not going to deny them.
I want to see some more pyrotechnic light shows.
That American.
We're not making this stuff up here. We can't. This isn't fake news. This isn't fabricated. This is just what the webs, the metaverse is giving us. And like Samuel said, he's just, his Google Pixel phone is clearly feeding him what it wants to see. But awesome, man. It was a great episode. Yeah, it was good stuff. It was awesome. We got to touch on, again, the political stuff. When I got involved in this industry, I had no clue how much politics would end up playing a role in the advancement of the industry. And when I say politics, I'm not talking like government regulation and that. You know, we all knew the regulations were going to change and develop in advance, but now to actually see like the political aspect of country of origin and the tariffs and the taxes and the bills being proposed, it's really, really interesting. So the global economics and the impact, but I guess when something has that much reach, it's unavoidable. So really cool. Talked about the responder drone that Brink put out with the UK checkerboard going that Terry pointed out. NDA, US made. So it's possible, right? It's just, what's the price tag on that? And all this stuff is so private. Like, everyone knows a DJI Doc 2 drone that has all these capabilities is $16,000, right? And you could find that on the internet. You could purchase one. You could get it tomorrow. How long is it going to take to get a responder dock, a responder drone? What is the cost of it? All those questions are what people need to know. And those are the hurdles that are going to keep it from getting out to market. And as you said, Samuel, right, getting people to say it's great. They've got to have them. They got to be able to afford them. So touched on Amazon, their advancement and beyond visual line of sight operations out of the Texas area and then growing further. Really cool Lego drone light shows promoting the you know, new products in their space kind of theme that they have there. So check out the video, look it up. Lego drone light show is really neat stuff. And again, if you have a chance to see a drone light show near you, don't pass up on it. Michael Jones with North Carolina Drone Pilot. If you're interested and want to know more, definitely look that up. It was a North Carolina incident where the North Carolina Board of Engineers took him to court. And it looks like, you know, at this point, the appeals he's tried to put in have failed. So maybe we'll get more information. Maybe one day we'll be able to bring Michael on and have him tell us exactly what happened. But really appreciate everybody tuning in, your time, your attention, and your support. Please reach out, send in your questions. We would appreciate that, and any interaction. We want to answer to the best of our abilities what you're needing to understand better or know or curious about. Stay tuned. Remember to like and follow and you know, subscribe to the DroneLife.com newsletter so that you can just stay up to date on all the latest and greatest. So appreciate you, Samuel, Terry, again, for your time and making the episode great. We will see everybody on the next episode.
See you guys next week.